Okay, good Moha, for God's sake. Get the happy birthday off there, all right? Enough of this, you people. I think they do it on purpose. They're trying to upset me. I'm not going to be upset. I'm very happy. I said to Leanne, I woke up this morning and I don't feel old. Like, I didn't have any aches and pains. There was no hangover. I wasn't sore or grumpy or any of that shit, which usually on my birthday I find reasons to be. Mm. So I'm happy.
And my response was?
Yeah, response was she turned around, walked to the bathroom to blow her nose and said, fuck off. So obviously
while I was limping with a sore hip.
Some people are not as happy. All right. Anyway, I've always wondered, and now that it's getting warmer, we're going to have to start thinking about this. The mozzie season is coming back. How do mosquitoes find us? I always heard, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's about the carbon dioxide that we breathe out.
That's the last thing I heard.
Yeah. Is that not it?
There's something new.
Oh, God.
And by the way, when I arrived in this building this morning, in the lift, I was accosted by a mozzie.
No.
They're back. They're already here.
Already?
We didn't even have time to sit outside and enjoy warmer weather before they came back. I've got two geckos on my deck.
Geckos on my deck. Okay, but they catch mozzies and eat.
Exactly.
Yes, good.
And they come back every year just in time.
All right.
So, yes, it's now been found that mosquitoes, particularly the species Aedes aegypti, can detect infrared radiation from our bodies. How much stuff goes into their little brains?
I
okay, firstly, geez, I hate them. Firstly, they're able to sniff out our carbon dioxide.
Yes.
And then what made me think about that is, but then how come when I'm sitting outside, they're biting my ankles? You know?
They hate you.
You see?
They're just filled with hatred. That's what they've got. Like tons and tons of hatred squeezed into that little body that goes.
Yeah. Oh, and then I thought maybe, but they must be detecting my veins near my ankles somehow.
I loathe and despise mosquitoes.
Yes. Well, now they do. In fact, we found out they pick up infrared radiation from human skin, enhancing their ability to find hosts.
Look at that. Look at that picture.
There we go. So you've got a naked or a bare person on the left.
A bare one.
That's
so look at how,
so
look
that's
at how
the mosquito sees shit.
That's to them, that is so exciting. They can just bite you anywhere on that arm.
Oh, and on your knuckle where you can't really find it.
Look how the cotton and polyester doesn't really help.
No, if it's form-fitting, it's not great.
It's too
tight.
But if
you think about it, if you've got a thin vest on, it'll pierce right through that.
Yeah.
So the best there is loose-fitting polyester. Polyester doesn't breathe, though.
Mm, it's disgusting to wear plastic.
In summer.
Yeah.
So in other words, we're still fucked. Okay.
Okay, so thanks for that. Yeah. We basically got to put up with these goddamn mosquitoes. Oh, I hate them.
Really, really horrible. But you know what? At least we don't have the malaria kind to worry about, because they're those.
They're parts of South Africa where they're still all over.
And then there's still the other ones. The one I was speaking about, Aedes aegypti, that spreads over 100 million cases of dengue fever, yellow fever, Zika, and other diseases each year.
Oh. It's terrible. And then they also got us worried about the monkey pox.
Yes, that too.
Ugh. Who needs it?
Apparently, we're not supposed to be worried. But, I mean, you shouldn't. You don't get worried about stuff like that.
No, I don't. And I'm not concerned. I really do think it's a clown show at the moment. You've got all these people in like, the World Health Organization who've completely shot their credibility, telling us, oh, no, you've got to get vaccinated. For what? Apparently.
You did, though.
I stupidly did. I regret doing it. I told you about that. I wish I hadn't for the vid.
Although it hasn't done anything to you, having the injection. Oh, sorry, I triggered it.
Nothing's happened. What are you talking about? All right, tell us what Li-Fi is.
Okay, so we've got Wi-Fi.
This is interesting.
Down.
Leanne always brings these new words. She told us where the demure thing comes from this morning. Thank God, because I still don't completely understand that. But what is Li-Fi? I thought you know, Wi-Fi, I understand. Like, that's the first thing anybody asks when they go into any building anywhere for any reason anymore. It's like, what's the Wi-Fi?
But also, we still have problems with Wi-Fi. It's so annoying.
Oh.
You know?
You mean it's not...
You know, when you lose it somewhere in a shopping center or, you know, you're trying to work from somewhere and the Wi-Fi, ugh, it's so annoying. Well, apparently that won't be a problem anymore because this new and unique technology is around the corner called Li-Fi. So Wi-Fi is wireless fidelity and Li-Fi is light fidelity. It uses the power of light to transmit data.
All right.
And it's not just daylight. It's like LED lighting.
Really?
So it should work at nighttime too.
And if you're in a dark room?
I'm not. Look, okay, so I've brought this picture.
Yeah, which shows us absolutely nothing. I don't understand. This is like the kind of slide people put up at a TED talk or a PowerPoint presentation in some meeting. And they go, look, there's the technology. That's how it works. But they don't explain anything to you.
At its core, data is transferred from LED light bulbs. Mm-hmm. These bulbs carry pulses of light that produce information similar to Morse code.
Oh.
Of course, this process can't be seen by the naked eye.
Thank God, because otherwise you'd give a beep, 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 beep.
However, the game changers in this scenario are the compatible devices that can synthesize this information rapidly. Oh. So, yeah, that's the next thing. If, you know, I think we've gone up to Wi-Fi 8 or something now. But the next thing is Li-Fi.
Wi-Fi 8.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think 8, 7 or 8. There we go. 6E and Wi-Fi 7 earlier this year.
Oh, I didn't even know we'd moved from Wi-Fi 0 to Wi-Fi 1.
And, you know, we've been going on Wi-Fi since 1996, so it's about time for a change, I reckon.
No, they didn't bring Wi-Fi in that early.
Yes, they did.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Emerged in 1996.
No. I was still at school.
Yeah, and it wasn't just for phones, but...
Wow. Yes. Okay. We had Wi-Fi all that time ago. They didn't tell us. You mean there was Wi-Fi? Oh, actually, I didn't even have a cell phone.
Exactly.
So what would the Wi-Fi have helped me?
Well, maybe it was helping places like NASA. Who knows?
I don't know. It certainly wasn't around me. I can tell you that much. All right. So that's quite a lot of useful information. I still thought this could be quite interesting too. There's a streaming war going on in South Africa. The introduction of various platforms, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, you know, Showmax. So according to data from Just Watch, Netflix holds the largest market share in South Africa, 31%, followed by Amazon Prime at 26%, Showmax 25%. Despite being the most popular, Netflix is the most expensive, followed by Showmax, Disney, Apple TV, and Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime offers the most affordable pricing at only 79 rand a month in terms of the number of titles. Amazon Prime Video has the most with 8,852 titles, followed by Netflix, blah, 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 blah. So in other words, most people have Netflix, but they don't care that it's expensive.
Well, it's still cheap compared to DSTV.
Yeah. I mean, it's cheap, but is it it's cheap? Like, you don't need any of these. I'll tell you why. I have none of them, and I'm fine. I mean, look at me. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't watch that much TV.
Oh, no.
How much TV do you watch?
Well, I watch on my phone, so one can't really call it TV. But how much streaming do I take in?
Do you consume?
I would say maximum an hour a day. Overall, so one, you know, on a weekend it might be like
you. It's the soaps,
3 hours
it's
or
the
something
soap
of
with you.
Binge watching.
I know you. It's the soap operas. What, Leanne? Is there a crocodile?
Yeah.
Leanne just went. There's a crocodile.
I did the slow look. I was scared to see what I was going to see.
No, there's some cool and interesting stuff being done in the studio here. We'll show you in a minute. I don't have any of these. I don't have Showmax. I don't have. Netflix, I don't have any of them. And
I've only got Netflix.
I have no FOMO at all. None.
I miss off of DSTV, I miss MasterChef Australia. That I miss. But and also, I mean, if you're a sports person, you're going to want DSTV,
this
right?
This whole year, the only thing I've watched was the Olympics. the whole year. I haven't watched anything else. I didn't watch. I mean, I might watch the U.S. election live in November. That's about it. I can't think of anything else I'll watch on TV live. Really?
Live stuff? No.
No, because
I love watching shows.
Not a big sports guy, so why would I watch that? I don't watch those crime things that you like to watch.
Mm.
That's horrible. I don't want to watch that. It's depressing.
I watch those, but then. Yeah, just really good shows.
And you like Isidingo the Knee?
No, definitely not. 100% not.
Is that still going, Isidingo? Well, can't be. Is it?
My dad's...
Guys, is Isidingo still a thing? Nobody knows. And nobody cares.
It's more like
look at
scandal
that.
These
no one
days.
Gives a shit that Isidingo's maybe not a thing. No one cares.
You know what's still big is Scandal. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. But otherwise, no.
All right. Well,
there's still one of the ones that's still going. I don't know if it's Igoli or one of those old ones that's still going.
Igoli's definitely not
no,
going,
it's
I'm
one,
sure.
It, but it's like that.
That died when we were at high school. Come on.
There's one that's still going. I know a friend of mine watches with her gran every day.
All right. Well, let me tell you what's happening here. Flex and James are busy setting up the studio because we've got two amazing guests who I'm very, very keen to talk to. Luca Pontigia and Yashin Modi, and they both are putting together an amazing show, which I think it's already started because our producer Dori went to it.
Mm.
And it is on at the, let me tell you about the details right now while we're getting on with this. The Universe and Stage is at, you're going to have to tell us. I can't see here. It's Thursday, the 29th of August. That one's obviously still coming. And then Thursday, the 13th and the 14th of September, Unraveling the Universe.
Mm.
Yeah. All the big questions answered. An hour and 30-minute performance divided into three acts exploring what black holes are, the minds that envisioned them, those who captured their image, accompanied by an original score, which is played live by Yashin while he's actually playing
amazing.
It live at the piano. It's fantastic. So I'm very, very excited to speak to them. Come and let them sit down. You guys can carry on setting up and fucking around all morning. Unplugging stuff, replugging stuff. God alone knows what the hell's going on here. You'd swear that this is the first time they'd ever thought about this.
Yeah, they've had the whole morning, haven't they?
Yeah, they had the whole morning to
and
sort this out. Yeah, come and have a seat here, Luca. Come, sit down. Yashin, come, grab a seat, you two. I want to talk to you about all of this. Let me tell you about them. Dr. Luca Pontigia has spent most of his life asking the universe questions around its existence. It's led him to obtaining his PhD, Leanne, in string theory at 27. And now at 32, it has resulted in him giving a number of talks on aspects of the universe that have inspired him the most. And Yashin Modi is a talented musician and actuary from South Africa. He learned to play the piano at the age of 8 and soon went on to win the Sanlam National Music Competition, which earned him recognition as the top musician in the country. He also excelled academically, graduating summa cum laude from Wits University with a degree in actuarial science. So, I mean, these guys are not,
you know, you were talking,
they're not morons.
You know, you said watching the Olympics made you feel like an underachiever.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Just tilt that microphone down a little bit there. Yeah, then we'll be fine. Because, I mean, James wouldn't have thought of that. All right. So, welcome, gentlemen. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, okay. Like I've spent some time talking to Luca. I met him through a mutual friend of ours who dragged me to one of your shows. What's about a year ago? Maybe a year and a half.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to me that the both of you are like so clever, and you do a normal day-to-day job, which involves crunching numbers and all the rest of it too. But that you decided to put the show together because people are fascinated with the subject of the universe and how it all works and what's going on out there and these incredible like marvels of black holes and galaxies and supernovas and neutron stars and all of this shit. And I think it's such a great thing that you're able to do this in addition to the fact that you're doing real jobs.
Yeah, it's very interesting the disconnect between when people talk about science and they feel like, oh my gosh, I sucked at science at school. And they feel very scared about the subject.
Yes.
They talk to them about the universe, about cool things in the universe. They get very excited. And so it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The science.
Well, I mean, I said when we were doing the intro to you a little bit earlier, I said that there are going to be 7-year-olds that will come to this show and love it. And there'll be 58-year-olds who'll come to it and love it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fun for both of them because they'll learn new things. And there's so much visually to kind of take in. And then with the music, it's beautiful. It's like you're part of an ongoing story, which is technically what the universe is. It's this ongoing, beautiful, expanding story.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, what's fascinating about both of us is, although our day jobs is quite different, we're both in storytelling. You know, Yash is an actuary. He's in sort of product development. And
I've never heard of actuaries being called storytellers. You have to back me up on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we do at Discovery is a lot of presentation work, a lot of sales work. So there's a traditional type of actuary that sits behind the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And then there's the new age actuary where we, you know, we build stories. It's about less interesting things like insurance and investments.
It's so important.
Yeah, well, less interesting than the universe, but important nonetheless.
How did you find each other?
So we actually worked on an actuarial conference project at Discovery hosts an annual innovation competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to use data to move things forward. And I had this idea in the insurance space around predicting, using our data to predict and early intervene on potential disability cases.
Oh my God. Leander, did you just zone out halfway through that sentence as well?
I was reluctant to go into too much detail. I think even that was too much detail.
Well, wait a minute.
Just a title.
All right.
But, yeah. So Luke,
that's it.
Well, now he's too scared to say anything.
He's put everyone to sleep. Okay. Trust me, the universe on stage is way better than that. Yeah, okay.
Right. He came up with the idea and he's like, Luke, I need someone to sort of do the modeling part of it. So Yash was like, he was part of the business part of it and I was the modeling part of it. So I came up with a kind of technique to do it and we won. We won this whole competition. We came first.
Yeah.
And I think we just recognized how well we work with each other. So Mahima, we both creative but logical.
Mm-hmm.
And we both have an ambition to do something other than just our day job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had this ambition to create talks. I think Yash had an ambition to make music. And this was a perfect intersection of those two. And we thought, screw it, let's just try it out. Let's put it together and see what comes from it.
So when I saw the show about a year or so ago, it was in the Bioscope in 44
in
Stanley.
The Bioscope. Yeah,
at 44 Stanley.
Yes.
They've got that little theater. And I mean, it was packed full. There were no empty seats and people loved it. And it was really, truly something amazing. I think I spoke about it on the show the next day. But this is a much bigger thing now. Where are you doing it?
We're doing it at the Mandela Theater. So the Joburg Theater is the Joburg Complex is the Old Civic Theater, has a couple of theaters, and the Mandela Theater is the biggest one.
Wow.
It's 1,058 seats or something like that. Yeah. I mean, the Bioscope is 47 seats.
Mm.
It's a significant order of magnitude jump.
This
is white dwarf to red giant. Okay.
It's incredible, but I know the potential of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I know that what we do can be put on the biggest of stages. And I have a vision that it can go to like the Royal Albert Hall, the Sydney Opera House. You know, and this is where I want to take it.
Fantastic.
And this is the first step in that. So this is not the final step, it's the first step.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right.
Amazing.
Obviously, the universe is full of all kinds of interesting stuff. How do you even choose the material that you're going to include and what you're going to have to leave behind?
So I would start off with what I, as a child or growing up, found most interesting because it's what I can speak to most authentically.
Mm-hmm.
And black holes was the first object that I came across when kind of just going through encyclopedias and science books, which grabbed my attention, as to most people. Yeah. It is fascinating, it's confusing, it's strange, it's weird.
Yeah.
How can they exist? And when I did my master's, I specifically wanted to do my master's on black holes because I'd always heard about them, but there's a difference between hearing about them and intimately knowing them. And by intimately knowing them, it's the maths, mathematics, studying mathematics, looking at the solutions that people found to discover these things. And when you see it from that lens, you see it in a completely different light.
So explain, do the Idiot's Guide to a Black Hole for us quickly, because for people who are maybe not, they haven't had a reason to be interested in these before, and they are fascinating, give us the gist. It's these amazing locations. We know they actually exist now because we've seen them too, thanks to photography that they managed to get from one of the space telescopes.
Like the Event Horizon Telescope.
That's right. And this is where everything gets kind of sucked into this black hole.
Yeah.
And there's the thing called the event horizon.
Yeah.
Where after that, we're not sure what happens.
Yeah.
But it could open up somewhere else.
Yeah.
On the other side and spit you
like
out
a portal.
Into a totally different universe. We don't know.
That's the fascinating part of it. So the short of it is you have a star. Now, if a star is big enough, meaning it is heavy enough and large enough, eventually it runs out of gas. And when it runs out of gas, the gravity starts to compress it. If it is big enough, there's a limit at which it needs to be big enough. But if it's past the limit, when it runs out of gas, it will, in a sense, almost implode.
Yeah.
And it creates such an intense gravitational field around it that it creates what you call this event horizon. And the way you can think of it is like if you have flowing water, right? So water flows in one direction. If I'm, let's say, on a rowing boat and I want to row upwards against the water, there's a speed at which the water flowing down and my boat rowing upwards is matched, right? And I can't move upwards because the water's flowing downwards. That's kind of like what we call the event horizon. I mean, no matter how fast you row, you will never move outwards of the water. You never flow upwards. When it comes to gravity, it's the same thing. So you have the event horizon is the point where the curvature of space is wrapping inwards so much that light can't escape because the speed of light is constant. And so when it's trying to escape the black hole, the curvature of space-time is going inwards, and they match. They're perfectly matched. And so it's trapped. So if light goes past the event horizon, it's a boundary. It's not a physical thing. It's just a boundary, and nothing can come out of it. Hence, it looks black. So that's the event horizon part. Everything seems to be located in the center of it. And this is where things break down. This is where understanding breaks down. Because we don't know what happens. It could be that all the mass of the sun, of the star, is located at the center. And it's an infinitesimally small point. But infinity doesn't work in nature. It's a mathematical infinity. But nature doesn't have infinities. It doesn't make any sense. So we don't know what happens. And it could be that it punctures to a different part of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It could puncture to a different universe. Maybe nothing special happens. And that's the massive search of science these days, is to understand what happens at the center of the black hole. Because if we can do that, we uncover new theories. If we cover new theories, we uncover potential new technology, and society moves forward.
So we can see them, but you can't go into them.
You can't see them, but you can see the effect that they have on the things around them. So as an example, most galaxies, if not all galaxies, have a black hole at the center. And where you have galaxies, you have stars. We have stars, you have food for the black hole to feed off of. And what that means is that as the star gets too close to the black hole, it gets ripped apart. And all the gases start accumulating around the edge of it, just outside the event horizon, orbiting inside. And it creates what we call an accretion disk. This accretion disk then becomes extremely bright. And under certain situations, it forms what we call a quasar. So a massive jet of energy coming out of the black hole. This is by far the brightest process in the universe. And so black holes, although are unseeable, they give rise to the brightest processes, which we can see. And so that's what we're able to do. We're able to take a picture of the accretion disk of the black hole. And you could see this accretion disk and you saw a hole at the center. And so that's how we're able to see the black holes. Because
why can't you go in it?
Oh, we can go in it. You just can't come out of it.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah. And, you know, if you went
in it. Did someone taste by throwing something in?
That's they're very far. I mean, the closest black hole that we know of is at the center of our own galaxy. I don't know how far that is, but it's
all right. So this far. It's idiot comment from V-Rose. Please, can someone tell me what the point of studying black holes is? Like, who cares? Don't you want to know what the physical processes of the universe are? Wouldn't you like to know how stars are formed, how they die, what happens to them, what that long span of history over 14 billion years is? Doesn't make you at least a little bit curious, or are you only interested in like the price of bread?
Or the fact that it might be the exit for when this planet implodes and we'll have somewhere else to go?
I think the most amazing questions come from these very big things. You know, it's like the best questions come from the very small things, like atoms. And you've studied string theory, so you know a little bit about the fact that most of these fields are tremendously complex. There are lots of brains working on them all the time, and a lot of it has not been solved.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the search for that knowledge is probably one of the most motivating things that there is for a human mind.
Yeah. No, I mean, I often say, like, the advancements of our understanding happens at the fringes of confusion, meaning the, you know, everything that we know sits in like a little circle, but what we don't know is far greater than that.
Yeah.
And it's in that boundary of uncertainty where the greatest thinking, the greatest ideas come into fruition.
Right.
And there's two parts of that. There's just the personal satisfaction of becoming a curious human being and what it does to you as an individual in terms of your ability to be more compassionate, be more open. And then there's the ability it has to society. I heard this quote, which I fundamentally agree with, and he said that the greatest asset, the greatest resources to human beings, to humankind, is not your oil, gold, those kind of resources. It's the curious mind with the willingness to learn.
Yeah.
And that is the greatest asset that you have to humanity for its way forward, because that is what society will advance off of.
All right. So, Yash, are you as interested in the subject matter, or are you just kind of being swept along, like, you know, in the universe as being a subject? Because, I mean, your music has to relate to what's going on.
Yeah, no, and I'll admit I wasn't particularly interested in astrophysics and black holes before I met Luca, more on the insurance and investment side, and then composing music on the side.
Sure.
But, you know, as we've been discussing these things, I've become more and more interested because of that narrative around the fact that it isn't actually, you know, the results of the equations, but it's what you uncover when solving these types of things.
Yeah.
Equations.
And you play live while it's going on. So you don't have like already predetermined cues and compositions. You go into this and you do it live. So it's different every time.
So it's sort of, I like how Luca describes, it's like 50 to 70% sort of fixed. Because we need to, we compose together, actually. We come up with a storyline and compose together because each section needs its sort of own feel.
Yeah.
So our current talk is contrasting the gravity theory versus the, you know, the theory of the small quantum mechanics. I hope I'm getting that right.
Yeah, you're getting it right.
I've seen the talk 30 times, so you know, I should be getting it right. So it's like making the one theory feel big, which is generally legato, you know, sort of low notes, expansive type of music. And then quantum theory is very light, very staccato, you know, upper end of the keyboard. So there's those things that we need to iron out, but then the other 50 to 30% is sort of.
Is it true that you could hear like a few notes? Luca told me this about you, so I don't know. I don't want to embarrass you here, but you can hear like a few notes of a song and you can pretty much work out how the rest of it goes.
Yeah, that's how I sort of started playing. My dad loved Scarborough Fair by Simon and Garfunkel.
Going to Scarborough Fair?
Yeah. So, you know, when we had that little hi-fi machine with all the stacks of CDs next to it, Queen Greatest Hits, and then Simon and Garfunkel was there.
Right.
And then they always used to play this, and then he just loved that song so much, even my mom. And then we had this old upright piano that was, you know, the previous owner of the house, and then it had keys missing. I had this sudden urge the one day to just learn that. I'd never played before, but I wanted to just impress my dad by learning the song. So I didn't have sheet music or anything, but I put the CD in, I listened to that song, and I sort of just worked out how to do the melody. And then by the time he came back from work, I played the song for him.
And imagine how much better it was when they actually tuned the piano.
When you got those missing keys.
Because you were actually playing a G, but it was an A.
Yeah. You didn't have to sing.
It got marginally better.
You didn't have to like sing the missing notes. Like,
the keys that were out. But there is something that links music to mathematics.
Mm.
We all know about this. People who are well versed in reading and writing music can tell you, you know, the sort of stuff that you were composing, whether it was stuff that you'd heard before or stuff that was completely original. Those scales, the
timing,
the movement of a melody,
the fractions,
all of that stuff has a lot to do with math. So there's kind of an overlap there too, right?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, even to go as far as to say some specific chord progressions invoke certain addictive qualities that
and
when
feelings.
You
feelings. Like if you play something in the minor key, it feels down and depressing it makes you feel like, oh, this is sad.
Yeah.
But if you play it in the major, it's like very upbeat and happy.
Yeah.
And you can do the same song in both.
And even I sometimes lose track of that when Luca serves as a good, you know, sense check or barometer to say, actually, that sounds, I want to invoke more of an ominous feeling here. And this is starting to sound very happy. Okay, maybe not as extreme as that, but subtle things like just a repetitive note versus something where I put the sustain pedal on, and actually, you know, that invokes a certain emotion there. So, you know, like we're becoming even more fine-tuned in terms of the craft. The way we started was he asked if I could play Interstellar and Hans, you know, other Pirates of the Caribbean, Hans Zimmer stuff, covers. Then we realized actually we can't scale with other people's music, so I need to compose my own stuff. And admittedly, at that point, I had never even tried to compose. And then it just started happening. You know, like it's
well, you just said the thing that, that I'm the most jealous of any person's talent is the ability to compose music. I mean, I find that it's like a kind of magic. If I see someone sitting down and they were, I posted a video on Instagram yesterday of Christopher Cross explaining how they came up with the intro to Sailing. I suddenly thought, oh, I just wish I could write one great song, but I know I can't, right? It's just a thing some people have, and it's okay. I'll get over it eventually. But being super clever, which is what both of you have too, is also a really cool skill to have, because you can use that to explain it to those of us who are not as clever. And I think that's a really fantastic thing. If one kid comes to this show and they're suddenly gripped by the idea of, you know, a neutron star, and they become in 10, 15 years time the leading thought leader, the one who's coming up with the theory that makes sense on something that we haven't understood properly before. I mean, that's like a contribution to humanity. Yeah. It's not just, oh, I was taught the kid to enjoy literature. Yeah. You know, this is a big deal.
There was a beautiful moment. We did a show at Yeshiva College.
Yeah.
And it was the grade ones to, I think, the grade 7 to 12.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a girl that came up after me, after the show, and she's like, you know, I never thought about science, but I think I want to look into it now. Mm-hmm. And it was just like really sweet. She was just, like she said, just very, this very simple, just like, thank you so much. I really enjoyed that. You know, I always thought science was boring. I never thought about doing it, but you already made me into it. And maybe I'll do it in high school. I mean, in university. And then she left. And I was like, oh, that's. But
even the way she asked the question, she like knew already so much about it. And she was like, wanted to look into it.
No, there were two people. There was a kid, the guy who was like, he was asking crazy questions, like amazing questions. But there was a particular girl who was just showed her the interest in wanting to go into it. And it was really nice. It was really touching.
How much research do you have to keep doing to stay on top of these things? Because they're bringing out new papers every other day, and you can't be expected to be an expert in everything, but the universe is kind of everything. So how do you draw the line? Where do you get your material from?
It's hard, because even now, when I was forming certain parts of the talk, new research comes out which almost invalidates certain things that I'm saying.
Yeah.
But like it doesn't invalidate it. Yeah, it doesn't invalidate to the point where it's wrong. It's just a new proposed theory. So I need to draw the boundary between I'm trying to teach you something versus I'm trying to tell you a story. And I think the fact that I'm erring on the narrative side of things, I'm trying to tell you a story about the universe, I'm okay with having certain facts which are in debate, certain facts which are still not completely proven. And it's how I position the story that tells you that this is not something which is definite. It is just our experience of it or our understanding of it so far.
Okay.
And so I try to keep it up to date so that when the questions are asked afterwards, or I need to change the narrative when certain things are completely wrong. But it's more about making sure that I'm being as true as possible to the real facts, to the narrative.
You take live questions during the show?
After the show.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like everybody's still sitting there. And
Yes. And most of the questions I can handle. Sometimes they're a little bit more detailed. Uh-huh. That I feel maybe it's more appropriate that I would speak to them afterwards. But
you know, you have some real like asshole actual professor of you know, astrophysics who comes to you and like asks you some really contentious question.
Or you have people who ask me very nonsensical questions, like the first show we had.
The very first question.
Yeah, it was this lady. First question, right? This is the first show. I'm nervous. First lady asks, she's like, she says, has anyone ever talked about the birds and the bees? Right? And I'm thinking, where is this going?
Yeah.
And
pervert.
And then she's like, and then she starts getting angry.
What?
And then she goes on a rant about how scientists have messed up our way of thinking. and how no one has taught us about astral orgasmic projections.
Oh, wow.
And that aliens
she's like
have...
a drug addict hippie.
Oh, my God.
She did have that, you know, and it was just...
Leanne, you've got to stop going to these shows, all right?
I didn't...
told you to stop.
It was crazy. So I managed to handle the question appropriately.
What did you say?
I told her that, you know, the beauty about science...
Buy yourself the rabbit.
I said, the beauty about science is that we can all have our thoughts and opinions about it, and we can be open to the possibilities. It's down to the
techniques. Very diplomatic answer.
It was very diplomatic.
I think you're at the wrong show.
I had people clapping afterwards from the answer.
Okay, good.
But the point is, yes, there are some... People have been very kind in most of it.
Sure.
No one has been trying to, like, sort of...
You know, undermine the show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if they do, I just say, you know what, let's have a chat afterwards. Yeah. And that's that.
You're very polite.
Yes.
Probably like highly religious people that might have a problem because of perhaps the distinction between being told a story about how the universe was created versus how it really was.
Just tell us quickly, because this is, I know it may or may not be part of your new show, but it's something that I've asked you before, like the birth of the universe and that singularity.
Yeah.
I mean, just explain that, because it's such a beautiful story. And this is something that did happen 14 billion years ago.
We
can date it exactly.
Yeah. Well, plus or minus, but yeah, it's roughly around there, you know. Yeah. And what's incredible is that the universe kind of came from nothing. That's for the crazy thing. How the hell did that happen? All right, mm-hmm. So there's that we're still not kind of sure of, like, what caused the Big Bang. But suppose this Big Bang happens. All of a sudden now, you have an extremely hot universe. And by hot, I mean, like, highly energetic. And it expands by something which we called inflation. So inflation expands the universe. And as it expands the universe, because it gets bigger, it starts cooling down. So all the particles or energy that was inside of there become less energetic, and they start cooling down. Then you have a process by which the certain particles started forming together. So you had your protons being created, your electrons, your neutrons.
What sort of time span are we talking about here between the Big Bang and the formation of subatomic particles?
Okay, I mean, this is detailed, but I think it's a couple of 100,000 years.
That's all?
That's it. So there was something called the recombination. So recombination is a process in the part of the early universe where you had the particles coming together.
Uh-huh.
And before that, it was just like light photons bouncing around, being stuck in this sort of bubble that was expanding. And as it sort of cooled down, the light could escape. And in fact, there's something called the cosmic microwave background. And that is the first image we have of the earliest universe, which shows the light that came out of this bubble that could escape now. And that's how we actually know how old the universe is from this cosmic microwave background.
And white noise.
Yes. So white noise
is like that stuff. If you switch everything off and you have a completely anechoic chamber, you will still hear in the background. It's like when you're tuning a radio, but that's obviously amplified.
Yeah.
And they've listened to that. It's everywhere. It's pernicious. You can't get rid of it. And that is a signature of the original universe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because, you know, the way light works or electromagnetic waves, right? So you have X-rays, UV rays, gamma rays, all the way to radio waves. Is that as the universe expanded, the space was stretching. As the space was stretching, any light that existed, its wavelengths get stretched. It gets longer and longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the earliest of universe, it had a very, very, very short wavelength. But as it gets
highly intense.
Highly intense. But as it stretches, it gets longer and longer and longer and longer until essentially it got into the microwave region, hence the cosmic microwave background. Right. And the antennas that were used for TVs and things like that are sensitive to microwave signals. And so it's just random microwave signals that are coming to us. And that is the early like remnants of light from the early universe.
So even if you can't see it and you can't experience it, you can hear.
Yeah.
The sound of the original universe.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
And they've tried everything to get rid of that sound. They cannot get rid of it.
There's
it's
a really
everywhere.
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, the story is that these guys were built a new radio telescope.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to take, I think, a picture or get some signal from some part of the sky. And no matter what they did, there was this constant buzz that they couldn't get rid of. They thought it was pigeons. They'd cleaned it out multiple times. Mm-hmm. No matter what they did, they couldn't get rid of this buzz in this antenna. And then they started realizing that maybe it's actually coming from the universe. And upon more inspection, they realized that, hang on, this is a signal of the earliest signal that we have. It's the early universe.
Talk to me about the different kinds of stars, because that's also interesting. And that you in the observable night sky, you can see like slight color differences between the stars.
Yeah.
But you get these incredible variations. And we may even see in our lifetimes things like Betelgeuse eventually like reaching its black hole moment and becoming supernova. And then obviously what happens after that.
Yeah.
But it could be happening in the night sky right now, but it would have happened thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Because everything we're seeing now is the light that's reaching us many, many years later.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an entire family of different stars. And roughly speaking, when a star is alive, its color, its composition is given by how big it is. So the bigger it is, the more fuel it has. And every star is the same in the sense that it starts off with a clump of hydrogen. The hydrogen gets compressed. It creates a nuclear reaction. The nuclear reaction then binds the hydrogen to helium, helium to nitrogen, so on and so forth. Depending on how much material there was from the start determines the size of the star, more or less. Mm-hmm. And depending on how big the star is determines on how long its lifespan is. The bigger the star, the shorter the lifespan, because the faster it burns its fuel.
Right.
So that the lifespan of the star is determined by these different things.
How, what's the lifespan of our star? Sun.
Our sun, it is 15 billion years.
Okay.
So it's been burning for 10.
So we're in the middle of it now.
Two-thirds of the way through.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's been burning for 10 billion
make,
years.
Better make those plans for the rest of the year.
Make hay while the sun shines. Yeah. What was it called?
Yeah, make hay while the sun shines.
We got quite a long way to escape to make sure we still survive. But it's the cool things happen after the death of the star. So once the star dies, there's many cool things that can happen. Depending on how big it is, depending on you know, the kind of... actually, depending mostly how big it is, it can either become a white dwarf, a black dwarf. It can go into it can explode into what is called a nova, where nova is just like a very sort of dim explosion. A supernova is a very bright explosion.
Yeah, a nova is like it's a boring.
It's a boring supernova. Yeah, right. Exactly, exactly.
It
can
like
become a neutron star. Then you can get, if not just star, can become a quasar. Can become a black hole.
Neutron star is bloody interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's like the most energy and the most light and power in the smallest little space, right?
If I'm not mistaken, I remember seeing...
What would it weigh?
So it could...
Billions
could have,
of kilograms.
You could have a star the size of, I think, a mountain or like a large city, but have the weight of the entire Earth. So it's like if a neutron star was the size of a teaspoon, it could have the weight of a mountain. That's kind of the scale. Like a little teaspoon size like that, but having the weight of an entire mountain.
And so the gravity that has is just
phenomenal.
Enormous, right?
It's
pulls
phenomenal.
In everything around it.
The physics that's happening around neutron stars, it's mind-blowing. And they're there. They exist there. And the surface is spinning, like a couple of the percentage of the speed of light. It's spinning extremely fast. It's extremely heavy. It's phenomenal.
Is there anything that could happen to planet Earth, taking into context the way the universe works, that actually scares you and you think might happen in your lifetime?
I wouldn't say anything scares me. I think what we're quite susceptible to from a universe perspective is obviously like asteroids.
There was this thing in St. Francis we were talking about earlier. I don't know if you heard about this.
Like a near miss.
Well, it was a meteorite. They say it could have been a meteorite. So it broke up in the Earth's atmosphere over St. Francis Bay. And the sighting led to reports of objects falling into the ocean near Jeffreys Bay. Witnesses in other areas reported hearing a loud bang and feeling their houses shake, suggesting a meteorite explosion. The South African National Space Agency is yet to confirm if it was indeed a meteorite. But I mean, that happened this weekend.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There are things that are entering our atmosphere the whole time.
There is. And the other one is, you know, you have these solar flares. So solar flares are quite interesting. That's a lot of our modern society is based on the fact that we have electronics working. And if you have a powerful enough jet of energy from like the sun or from other kind of cosmic events, those rays of energy will come through our atmosphere and will fry everything. And it will fry the electronics, and you'll have like a massive blackout in our society because of this.
Imagine all comms going down.
Yes. So that is quite an intense thing. And I think it's not scary, but that's definitely something that we very susceptible to from planet Earth. We have a magnetic field which protects us from most of it, but to limits. You know, if you have a very bright, very intense event that happens, it'll get through.
Well, what are you scared of, Leanne?
Yeah, just running out of wine.
Haley's Wi-Fi. Comment coming around a little bit too close.
Like wine, Wi-Fi, and maybe knickknacks.
All right, so tell us about the show itself. How long is it? An hour and a bit?
Yeah, it's 1 hour and 30 minutes.
Perfect.
It is, I think, as you mentioned, divided into 3 acts.
Excellent.
It's at the Joburg Theatre, Nelson Mandela Theatre, 1,000 seats, the 13th and 14th September. The show is called Hidden Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a... It started off from the show that you saw, Gareth,
yes.
Black Holes.
Yeah.
And the problem with that particular show is that we had YouTube clips. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of copyright issues. So what's amazing about this is that, you know, we've gotten a graphics design agency to actually create the visuals for us.
Nice. With
custom visuals, which are on brand, consistent across the entire talk.
Used any AI?
We have used some AI.
Good.
Yes. Yash has composed the music, like I said, from scratch for each individual
part. So this is totally original.
Totally original. And it's, in essence, just the journey of how we captured the first picture of the black hole.
Amazing.
Of how just insane and incredible black holes are. Of how life was created as a function of potentially black holes, or the end of the universe will look like, and how black holes will be the last objects that remain in this universe. It'll be about the minds, Einstein, who conceptualized the mathematics required to come up with black holes. It explores just the importance of curiosity and how if we can follow curiosity together with a tool like mathematics, we can make the most incredible discoveries of the world around us. And it then explores the engineering, the devices required to make the most fine-tuned measurements ever, like LIGO, which was a observatory, which was able to measure vibrations in space and time to 1/10,000th the width of a proton. Yo. That is how small they had to measure the oscillations of space and time as the waves or gravitational waves are going through it, because two black holes merged a billion light years away. And
phenomenal.
So it's that exploration.
Jesus.
And to the point is to leave people with a sense of, cool, there's these black holes out there, which is very interesting. But we all have ideas in our lives that we often dismiss because we think it's stupid, or we think that society says that we shouldn't go down it. But what if you didn't? You know, what if we stopped and actually explored those ideas we have in earnest and really allowed ourselves to learn the skills required to investigate these ideas? What could you uncover? And yeah.
Debbie wants to know, are you doing any shows in Cape Town?
We are in discussion with it.
Okay.
We're currently in discussion with the Baxter Theatre.
Okay.
And they seem very interested in doing something there. So we are hoping to organize a big screen for that for the hall. If we can do that, that's the idea. Potentially end of November, Cape Town.
Okay, so then you just said like stupid things. So why are you doing Mr. South Africa?
I mean,
if you're doing all this cool stuff and the universe and you've got this real job and, you know, I mean, yeah, she must be embarrassed. Why should he be doing Mr. South Africa?
Actually, interesting. He sent an
when
email.
When he told you that, did you say to him, okay, I'm not working with you anymore?
No, he did say it's all for the show. It's all. And then the best part was he sent an email out to a lot of the senior guys at Discovery.
Yeah.
All of our managers, our CEOs. It's like, I'm doing Mr. South Africa. And then I responded, accidentally replied to all. I'm looking forward to the speedo round.
Okay, so what do you have to do for Mr. South Africa?
So there is a couple of challenges they've given us for Mr. South Africa. So firstly put, Mr. South Africa was something I did as an attempt to just do a different experience. I mean, one's source of, simply put, creativity is a function of the experiences that you've been exposed to. And by exposing myself to strange things, I believe I've become a much more of a creative person.
Okay, well, what's the strangest thing so far about Mr. South Africa that you wouldn't expect?
I've been having to promote brands that I don't know. I've been having to create content for brands. I've been having to advertise.
Sounds horrible.
It's exhausting. But it's, Gareth, if you commit to something in earnest, you'll always learn something.
So is there a speedo round?
So there is.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So,
okay.
So I basically, I've recently now made the top 10. So,
okay.
Now
oh, congrats.
Thank you. So now we're the finalists. And the speedrun happens on the finals. And it's...
So you've been working out?
I have.
In between all of this universe
I have, you know...
Put a stop to the McDonald's.
I've stopped McDonald's. I've got a dietitian.
Okay.
I've gotten someone to... So one of the gyms, Gold's Gym, who one of my sponsors, one of my advertising partners for South Africa, they've literally given me a personal trainer.
Is it working?
It is.
Okay,
it is.
Good.
I'm trying to get as ripped as possible for this round.
Good,
you know?
Man.
So that's part of it. It's how you look. It's what you're doing for society. It's how you advertise and how you promote. It's those three elements. Are you someone who's brandable? Mm-hmm. Are you someone who's making a difference? And are you someone who's, I guess, looks after themselves?
Okay.
Those are three components for myself.
Right. Were the family pleased about this?
They are. They are very... They're proud, and my mom was often saying, like, do you feel weird that maybe you're being objectified? and I don't know. I was like, I don't actually care, to be honest. I think I know why I'm doing this, and I know the purpose behind it, and people can think of it what they think. But as long as I'm getting something out of it, which I believe is good, and I'm making a difference in what I can, that's fine.
I don't know any Mr. South Africans. I wouldn't know who won it last year or the year before with Julianne. But maybe you'll change that.
Maybe
you'll make it interesting.
I think it's about bringing who you are.
There aren't any other string theorists among the other contestants.
No. There's another doctor. He's a medical doctor.
Okay.
But the rest of the guys work, one's an actor. I think some guy works in government.
Okay. So it's a real mix.
It's a real mix. And genuinely, it's like amazing people. Very wholesome people.
Very good.
I went into this thing thinking, oh, it's going to be a bunch of meatheads. not to be mean, but that's what I thought. And then I was genuinely surprised that they are wholesome people. For example, there was supposed to be this Cape Town event, and I got sick. I had really bad food poisoning, and I couldn't go. And they video called me to make sure I was part of the picture, and they checked how I was doing. Just caring people, and they didn't have to do that, but it just tells me that there's good character.
What did you eat that gave you the food poisoning?
McDonald's. I relapsed. For the one time I had McDonald's after 2 months, I relapsed.
Stay away from the takeaways. You see? That's terrible. All right, so Yash, I don't know if we've got that all connected. Have they actually, man? I mean, this is like, I don't think so. Let's just see, because you could play us out for the last bit of the show. I want Luca to talk about Mr. South Africa, and then you can post something right now about how stupid that is. Okay?
Okay, so, that's an interesting task.
So he's going to talk about what he's going to do as Mr. South Africa if he wins for world peace and all of that stuff, and you'll play something for us.
I want something that is going.
Something inspirational
and triumphant.
Yeah, there we go. All right, okay. So here we go. We're going to see it all happen live.
The sound.
That's perfect. You go for it. All right, talk about it. Go.
All right, okay. Yeah. So if I win Mr. South Africa, what my plan is to take what I do with the universe on stage. Is to take what I do with the universe on stage and amplify it to the rest of South Africa. I want to inspire kids around science. I want to inspire adults to be more curious. And I want to showcase the potential of being a role model in this country. I want to show that we can exist with kindness, with compassion, and I really hope that more people recognize that they have the ability to do amazing things in this world. So, vote for me.
That's so beautiful.
Oh,
pretty good.
All right, no, I love it. Listen, guys, I can honestly tell you, I was not keen to come and see your show. It was a Sunday. I was irritated.
Which is every day for Gareth.
Our mutual friend Jesse is like, you have to come and see this. You got to meet this friend of mine. I was so goddamn pleased that I went. And I can honestly say that anybody who goes to this will have their minds blown. It is terrific. Doesn't matter how much or how little you know. There's always more to learn about the universe. And I'd rather learn it from people who can actually make it entertaining like you do. So well done. And I'm glad we finally got you into the show. I've been saying we would do this for months. So here they are. So go and check out what Luca and Yash are doing, and you will be very glad that you did.
Thank you.
All right.
I just think it's a great idea. Guys,
it's
Gareth's birthday.
Oh,
get...
That's a birthday.
Fuck, James. No, we're not. No, do not do this. Forget about it. No, that's the end of the show. All right, thank you very much.
Very good.
Done.